the sit originally was a family sit. So we would meet with kids and people could come and sit with their families. But since we're online, and part of that was that we would read a story so the kids would somehow be connected to the practice at the same time. So, when we got online, I don't have a lot of kids' books, so I couldn't really share stories like we used to. But someone told me about the internet, and there are kid stories on there. And so, that was a game changer. So now I share a little story from the internet. And I'm going to use my favorite go-to storyteller, Dare to Do Motivation. And I think between the story and Arv's meditation, we should have a great kind of way to end out what we've been talking about all year. So let's start with this story.
Hi, this is Dare to Do Motivation, and this is the story of the real meaning of peace. So once upon a time, there lived a king who announced to prize the artist who would paint the best painting depicting peace. Many great painters sent the king several of their best art pieces. One of the pictures that stood out among the various masterpieces was of a calm lake, perfectly mirroring peacefully towering snow-capped mountains. Overhead was a blue clear sky with fluffy clouds. The picture was perfect. Most of the people who viewed the pictures of peace from various artists thought that it was the best among all of them. But when the king announced the winner, everyone was shocked. The picture which won the prize had mountains too, but they were rugged and bare. The sky looked very angry. There was lightning. This didn't look peaceful at all. It looked like the artist had mistakenly submitted his painting depicting a storm rather than peace. But if one looked closely at the painting, one could see a tiny bush growing in the cracks of the rock. In that bush, a mother bird had built her nest. In the midst of the rush of angry weather, the bird sat on her nest with peace. You see, in life, in your life, peace does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise or trouble. Peace means to be in the midst of all of the chaos of the world and still be calm in heart. The real peace is in the state of mind, not the state of the surroundings. You should live from the inside to the outside and not the other way around. The mother bird, at her calm, despite her chaotic surrounding, indeed is the best representation for peace. Because your inner calmness will protect you when the world around you starts crumbling. So stay calm and stay strong.
Is that cute? Did you hear that? I think that was great, wasn't it? This is, I think, what we have been trying to articulate over the last year and into this month. It's why Tim and I wanted to use do transcendental dependent origination for the last month of December. Because all year, the first 11 months, we have been talking about the storm the picture around. We've been talking about the weather systems and how those weather systems and how the nature of what's happening around us, the chaos that's around us, influences how we react. So we are continuously being battered about and reacting to whatever's going on around us. And the Dhamma is not about somehow believing that the world should be nice mountain ranges with beautiful lakes and everything is all beautiful and nice. And if that's the way it is, then we can be calm and peaceful. That is not what Dhamma's saying. What Dhamma is pointing to is the co-arising nature of difficulty and peace, that it's possible for both the chaos and the peace to exist simultaneously, because they do. But it starts with having this willingness to, instead of following the mind's reactivity, whatever's happening, instead of following the mind's reactivity to what's ever happening, instead, we are learning to be with it, to see it as Arv was doing. All he was pointing to this morning was just see what you're experiencing. Watch what's going on. Take a moment to be with it and acknowledge it and see it. Just see it. So if you think about that little bird in her cage, I mean in her little nest, and she's rested on this bush in this tumultuous kind of environment here. If she doesn't pay attention to what's happening, the environment can sweep her away. But if she pays attention to the currents of the wind, and she pays attention to the level of the snow, she can maneuver around just fine. The outer environment doesn't have to decide how peaceful her world is. She has to know the outer environment and move accordingly. And that is what Dhamma is pointing to. It's not pointing to ignore the outer environment. So if it's chaos, just let it be chaos for everybody else and I'm good. It's not pointing to get caught up in the outer environment and try to fix it and make it better so it's better. It's pointing to learning to see the outer environment as a reality. And then we see how we need to move in it. So for those of you that didn't spend the whole year with us, unfortunately, we didn't start recording the Sunday sits until later. And so you start with, if you look on the Monday night sits, you can track how we've been coming along over the last 11 months. And then we get to transcendental dependent origination, which is about when we come into an understanding, a moment in time when we realize there's a difficulty here. And we do it with difficulties because it's easier for us to be willing to practice with difficulty than it is for us to want to practice when things are going good. Because when things are going good, we have the tendency to think, oh, there's nothing to practice with. Even though when things are going good, difficulty is right behind the corner. But so it's easier to practice with something we already think something needs to be done about this. So in the midst of some difficulty, to move towards transcendental dependent origination means to start with a level of faith and trust the way Arv was kept pointing to in his meditation, just this letting it be, just noticing what's happening. Even if you're irritated, upset, sad, lonely, whatever that emotional energy is or that discomfort is, you're at the pain of it, you are accepting, oh my God, this is the way it is right now. This is actually the way it is right now. And you're letting the way it is right now be real. On the inside, you are not going to resist the way it is right now. Not because you have to like it, but because you can see more clearly what is the appropriate thing to do given my current situation. You can see whether or not the difficulty is coming from your own attitude or it's coming from the circumstances. If it's coming from your attitude, you might can loosen that attitude up some. If it's coming from the circumstances, you might have no ability to change that. So all of your fighting is unnecessary. It's a way of beginning. Dependent origination is more about learning how to be less trapped by our reactivity and more trusting that we will see the best way to respond if we take the time to be still and calm, to be peaceful with the truth of what's in front of us. And mostly that truth comes on the heels of discomfort, suffering. That's why the Buddha said the first ennobling truth was the recognition that there's some level of suffering. Once we see that and we stop fighting the suffering, then we can begin to see the better way to move, the better way to respond. We can see the path. It's like football players who are great. Some of these football players over the years that I don't even watch football, but I like running games or even the long passes where people run these plays and they're moving and you're trying to see what path are they moving? Why are they running over here and then running over here? And then there's the ball, right? So they know which way the quarterback is going to throw the ball. And they're running this path. We don't see it, but they know it. They can see the path, or in their running games, they can see the holes and how to run through. That's what you're looking for. You're not looking for a world where you got to pound your way through, and sometimes we do that. And you're not looking for the world where everybody clears out of the way so you can go. You're looking for learning how to see your way through by paying attention to what's actually happening and getting a sense, oh, I see what's going on here, or I see these patterns in my life, or I see what's happening, and then we can move with it, understand it. We know how to let go of our own patterns and be more connected to the world. So we're going to do a longer together share. I'm going to kind of stop with my talk here so that you have some time to be together and talk about what you kind of see. The question I want to give you, though, is what is it that you think keeps you from being patient with difficulty? Right? When things are getting ugly, when you don't like something, I don't want you to talk about what you don't like, why you don't like it. I want you to consider, why can't I be patient or still or accepting of something I don't like. Why do I have to fix it right away, straight away? Got to make this work. I got to get it done. Why can't I just be still with it, have some peace with it, and get a better look at it? That's what I want you to see if you can consider. What is it that keeps you from being still with difficulty? And then we'll come back and talk about it and talk about some practice tips at the same time. So for those of you that are not up for sharing, I want to give you a chance to bow out and thank everybody. We'll see you next week. And for everybody else, I'm going to start signing these rooms. All righty. Good. I gave you guys a little extra time so that I gave you a little extra time there. I didn't realize what time it was. So let's see if anybody wants to share some insight they got in their group or just from the practice we've been doing this morning. We'll take maybe a couple, two or three.
I guess when you ask, you know, when you ask the question, you know, what kind of inhibits us from what kind of like inhibits us from, you know, like what are those factors? I think for me, one thing that I realize is that I think sometimes I have this anxiety about the circumstances or like perhaps the outcome of those circumstances. You know, like if you're working and you're trying to hit a deadline and you have the anxiety of like, oh, what's going to happen if, it's finished or, you know, all these external things, and it kind of overrides the kind of the more rational or logical part of your brain that's trying to take a step back and say, okay, well, you know, what's really going to happen? Well, probably nothing really, right? Nothing bad's going to happen. Like, you're not going to get fired. Life's going to go on.
Yeah.
But the anxiety about that outcome is sometimes hard to override. And then to be able to start taking that step back, to be able to start practicing the skills that you work on. So I was just curious if you got any thoughts on that or, you know.
Yes. That is the nature of suffering. It is the pushing into the future and the trying to push away what it is that we don't like, right? So what transcendental practice is about is sort of recognizing that in the midst of the difficulty, you don't have to fix the difficulty. You don't have to fix the anxiety. You have to allow the anxiety to be there. It's almost like recognizing that, oh yeah, when you have a deadline, you're going to have anxiety as you inch up on that deadline. So the anxiety is not a sign that something's wrong. Anxiety is a co-arising experience when you're inching up on a deadline. That allowing it to be is what gives you more of the capacity to find this kind of peace in the midst of chaos. And the way that we allow it to be comes from, it starts with faith. I mean, it starts with this trust that I'm going to be able to deal with whatever comes up. I've already lived through hell and back. I'm going to be able to deal with anything. But the mind convinces us that this is the one thing that's going to take us out. This is it. I know it. And it's not. So what you're trying to learn how to do is not have anxiety. You're trying to learn how to allow the anxiety to be there as part of what it means to be human. Do you see the difference between the two? And then you can learn to, once you allow that anxiety to be here, you will stop the work to try to make the anxiety go away, and you can refocus your attention on what do you need to do right now.
It's almost just being at peace with the anxiety, kind of like when we're doing the meditation, not trying to relax our body, but just being at peace with, like, you know, however it happens to be feeling.
That's right. That's right. That's why when we meditate, we are not practicing to get peaceful. In fact, your best meditations are when it's not peaceful, so that you can learn how to practice with it's not peaceful, but I'm still okay. And so that's really what we're pointing to. I think Buddha was pointing to the opposite of the trendy way in which we think about meditation nowadays. Instead of it being, oh, it's all relaxing, everything is beautiful, it's more like, oh, thank God, this was a miserable sit. And I sat right there with it. That's really what we're looking for, is difficulty in the sit, and we're still sitting with it, figuring out how to work with it, so that when difficulty shows up in our greater life, we have practiced working with it in a smaller context. Good. Anybody else want to? I mean, that was pretty much, that's pretty much it. That's the whole point right there.
Lauren brought up about dealing with her probably mostly anxiety is focusing in her body and what it feels like as a way to be present with it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it always helps me when I do that, and I will try to remember to do that more.
That's right. It is so even with anxiety, having so much of it, what I found was the best way for me to deal with anxiety is to get interested in it. Because in some respects, we think anxiety, I know what it is, this is it, and this is anxiety. But if you actually pay attention to anxiety, it is very nebulous. It isn't always the same. And sometimes it's more intense in some places than it is in other places. It's all, I mean, it's this full gamut of things that go on when we have what we call anxiety. And learning to pay attention to the anxiety rather than just calling it anxiety and reacting to what we normally think we need to do to get rid of it creates this ability to be with anxious feelings and anxious sensations without it having to go away. I think the biggest moment in time when anxiety changed for me was I was getting ready to go do a Dhamma talk, and I felt this overwhelming rush of anxiety. But, you know, I had been practicing feeling anxiety for a while, and I felt this overwhelming rush of it, and I was just getting ready, and I could even feel my hands shaking when I was in the bathroom getting ready. And I was just getting ready, feeling that, oh, this is anxiety, feeling it. And I'm like, what am I so anxious about? What is it that is driving all this? So I sat down on the toilet, and I was just sitting there trying to feel this, like, what is this? And I heard this little voice that said, something's going to go wrong. Something's going to mess up. Something's going to go wrong. Something's going to mess up. And I burst out and started laughing. I mean, because at that moment in my life, the idea that something would go wrong has happened so many times that, I mean, I've like so many Dhamma talks and so much stuff has gone wrong that it was hilarious that it sounded like a little kid saying something's going to go wrong. And I was feeling this huge rush of anxiety because some younger part of me thought something's going to go wrong. Of course something's going to go wrong. Something always goes wrong on a Dhamma talk. That's just normal. But it was my never really seeing that kept driving it. But the only way you can begin to see that little voice is you have to be willing to see the felt sense experience of it. You have to be willing to feel that anxiety so you cannot react to it and hear the smaller thing that's going on. That was the first time I realized what was driving 90% of my anxiety was the little girl in me that thought something was going to go wrong. I'm going to get in trouble if something goes wrong. So now whenever I feel that anxiety, I always say, it's okay. Whatever goes wrong, I think we can take care of it. I think we'll be okay. Don't worry. And it just sort of settles down. It's so simple, but we can only get to it if we're willing to practice with the discomfort of what it feels like so that we are not always trapped in reacting to that discomfort. Do you see what the difference? You're not necessarily saying, oh, anxiety is okay. Let it just stay in my life. But you're trying to learn how to be still with it, accept it, sort of surrender to it so you can see it more clearly. But we won't see it more clearly if we are constantly trying to fix it and get rid of it and make it better and all of that. Then we only see the image of the anxiety and we're trying to correct that problem. So dependent origination, we spend a year trying to figure out how it is that we can see the anxiety. And then transcendental, we only spend a month, but it is the practice of having the faith to see it and see what our perspective is.
Tuari?
Yeah.
Along those lines, what really helped me with that was Philip talking about feeling the ouch, that I needed to feel the ouch. And just that one word, I could feel that viscerally. And so when it just helped me kind of guide myself. Okay, I haven't felt the ouch yet. But the problems for me is that the ouch is frequently associated with my ego and shame or embarrassment. Yes. And so it really feels very emotionally painful. And yes. Another thing that helped me would be just to say to myself is one of the Four Noble Truths, protecting my ego. Is that one of the goals that is I am here for? And
that's
then
right.
I say, no, I'm not here to protect my ego. So I'm going to feel the ouch of it.
That's right.
Helpful to me.
That's right. And the more you're willing to do that, the less you need to protect your ego. But the less you're willing to feel the ouch, the more you're going to protect your ego. It's kind of a mixed bag in that way.
Yeah.
All right, good peoples. So next week we'll start a new year, a new topic. We do have the Refuges and Precepts that we do on Monday night. So not this Monday, next Monday, we will be doing the Refuges and Precepts. Does that mean that we're going to do our Sunday sit before the Refuges and Precepts? Is that what it is?
Yes.
I just got that. Anyway, so we're going to start a new year with a whole new topic. We'll talk about that next week. And a whole new, we're going to, it's not like we're changing directions. We're going to take the momentum we've built on the trend, on the heels of the dependent origination and move it into our everyday life. So we'll talk about that next week too. All right. So thank you so much. Arv?
As always, we invite you to offer dana or generosity, both to today's teacher, to Tuari, and also to Sims. Dana to teachers and to Sims can be made by going to the donation tab on the homepage of the Sims website. And of course, Sims and its teachers always offer these teachings freely, regardless of the ability to pay. Of course, anything you can offer supports the livelihood of our teachers, and we all appreciate the generosity. I will end with an offering of, well, it's a combination of metta, mudita, and some of the other Brahma Viharas. May our hearts be at ease. May we live with kindness in the midst of all that arises. May all beings live with ease and with kindness amongst whatever arises in their lives. And may the suffering of this world be met with compassion.
All right, good peoples. We'll see you all next week. Have a wonderful, I guess would be a New Year's.